second case this morning, United States v. Chairs.
Good morning. My name is Grant Shostak, and I represent Antoine Chairs. May it please the court, counsel. District Court clearly erred when it denied Mr. Chairs a two-point reduction for acceptance of responsibility. And I think the context of this case, I think it's important to look at Mr. Chairs. At the time, he was 27 years old. He had dropped out of school in the eighth grade. He had a considerable criminal history. He was unable to pass his GED exam. He was a drug addict, had been living on his own since he was 13 years old, and it was clear he didn't understand the federal criminal system. At the sentencing hearing, the evidence showed that Mr. Chairs tried to accept his responsibility. The probation officer found that Mr. Chairs accepted his responsibility. Mr. Chairs said he didn't know any other way to express his remorse to the court, to try to satisfy the court and the prosecution that he had accepted his responsibility. But I think if you look past his words and you look at his actions, they show that he accepted his responsibility. He submitted a number of certificates indicating that he had embraced his religion while he had been incarcerated or in custody. He had taken a number of courses before he entered his guilty plea and as well as after entering his guilty plea. He submitted a number of the drawings to the court indicating that he wanted to live a better life. I think under the circumstances, not only do his words show it, but his actions showed that he accepted his responsibility and that it would be appropriate that he should have been granted a two-level reduction.
Thank you, Counselor. Ms. Scott?
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Angie Scott. I represent the government and U.S. versus Chairs. I'd just like to point out that the district court carefully considered this matter before ruling on it and determined that the government was correct, that Mr. Chairs did not, in fact, accept responsibility. If the court would consider one of the things that the government pointed out and the court noted was the defendant had numerous attorneys. Numerous change of plea hearings were set. He had ample opportunity to plead guilty prior to trial, and at each change of plea hearing, he would either ask for a new attorney or ask for a continuance. In fact, the day that the trial was supposed to start, he again asked for a new attorney. The defendant indicates repeatedly, well, I didn't intend to go to trial. I never intended to go to trial. He says it at sentencing. He says it at the change of plea hearing. But if that were true, and he also acknowledged during sentencing that he knew that the parties were preparing to go to trial, and yet he persisted in allowing his attorney, allowing the government to prepare for trial, and then when the jury is downstairs waiting to be brought up, he makes a motion for a new counsel and tries to get the trial delayed once again while arguing that his counsel was ineffective because he didn't bring a speedy trial argument. And as the court noted, as the court pointed out, this was just another ploy by Mr. Chairs to try to game the system. Every time it became close to him going to trial or pleading, he would file a motion for new counsel. He would file something to delay the trial. And the court said, look, I'm not going to give you another lawyer. He had two lawyers. He even had a brief period where he was pro se. And then he received Mr. Butts. And his argument was, well, all my lawyers are telling me the same thing, plead, plead, plead. Well, and as the court said, you know, well, if that's what everybody's telling you, then maybe that's something you should consider. The government's position is that the defendant intended to file the motion to withdraw counsel on the day of trial and hoped that the trial court would grant it so that the trial would be put off once again and he would get a new attorney and he would continue his case yet again. The defendant had a prior federal case. He knew how the federal system worked. In fact, Judge Herndon mentioned that. Well, you know, this is not like the state system. He kept continually saying, look, you know, I never meant to go to trial. I never meant to go to trial. But he never pled until it looked like he had no other choice. He either had to go to trial that day. If you look at the very last thing he said to the court before agreeing to plead was, so you're telling me I have to proceed to trial. And the district court said to him, yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. Or he says, so I have to go to trial. And the district court said, that's exactly what I just said. And at that point, Your Honor, that was when he finally decided that he was going to plead guilty. And it's the government's position that it was only at that point that he realized that if he wanted to get this 2 points for acceptance of responsibility and get a lesser sentence, he'd better plead guilty at that point because he was going to be going to trial. The Judge Herndon was not going to allow him to delay these proceedings any further. Your Honor, the court considered this issue. In fact, he indicated that he'd even struggled with the issue because it was such an important issue, the acceptance of responsibility, and that based on all the materials that Mr. Chairs had submitted, Mr. Chairs' own testimony, that he did not believe that Mr. Chairs had accepted responsibility. In fact, it appeared that Mr. Chairs did not accept responsibility until he realized at some point, look, this is what the court wants me to say. And he says in his testimony, well, now I'm really starting to see it the way the court see it. I didn't see it the way the court was seeing it. And at this point, that's when he starts saying, yeah, it was an aggressive act. Yeah, now I realize there was a victim. It wasn't until that point that he started acknowledging some of the things that he should have acknowledged earlier if he was actually truly remorseful for what he did. I would also point out that the defendant continually, even at sentencing, continually argued about an element of the offense as to count two, the possession of the sawed-off shotgun. On direct examination, I indicated to him, I asked him if he had any issues or why did he contest that at the change of plea hearing. And his response to me is, all I know is I didn't know the shotgun was sawed off. I never looked at it. I never measured it. All I did was took it. I didn't do no examination on it, so I didn't know it was the sawed off. Looked normal to me. So even at sentencing, he's again not accepting responsibility for his actions, even though he pled guilty to that very fact that he had to know this gun possessed the characteristics of being a sawed-off shotgun in order for the government to have proved the case beyond a reasonable doubt. He finally says, after talking to the court again one more time, he finishes by saying, I know what I did now. So I'm sorry for what I did. I don't know no other way I can say it. And as the court pointed out in its ruling, it appears to the court that he did not hear that the defendant did not accept responsibility at the time of his plea, but rather when he realized what the court wanted him to say. And the court said in its ruling, not only was his plea late in arriving, despite his language that he always intended to plead guilty, despite lawyer after lawyer telling him he should, his testimony was couched in terms of Well, now he understood what the judge was thinking, and now he understood who the victims were. Now he understood what the judge was looking for. So the reality of what he needed to be thinking in terms of acceptance and what he needed to do for acceptance was even later in coming than this plea. Based on those, the judge correctly denied the two-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility. And again, Mr. Chairs, he talks again at the end of the sentence. He said, I never said that I was not guilty, and I always let the court know that I wasn't going to challenge them to trial. It wasn't. I disagree, and I wasn't trying to spend the taxpayers' money. But that's exactly what he did, because at every change of plea hearing, he would get it continued somehow. He knew that the parties were actively preparing for trial. Mr. Shostak and I had numerous discussions over what he would stipulate to, what wouldn't be stipulated to, how the videotape would be played. So he knew that, and he acknowledged on cross-examination, yeah, I knew we were preparing for trial. So if what he was saying was true, then that he never intended to go to trial, he never intended to waste taxpayers' money, he should have pled guilty on the ample and all the time before the day the trial was supposed to start, at the three scheduled change of plea hearings, and even before his motion was denied. It's the government's position that Mr. Chair simply pled guilty once he realized the judge wasn't going to let him get away with continuing the trial once again, and that he was going to go to trial at that point. And if there are no questions.
Thank you, Counselor. Thank you.
Thank you. Just want to respond briefly. Prosecutor has pointed out a number of Mr. Chair's actions in the courtroom, his motions to withdraw counsel, motions to continue. I would suggest to the court that those are indicative of his lack of understanding of the federal system, his lack of education, and his drug abuse. I think the evidence showed he accepted responsibility as best that he could. And for those reasons, we suggest to the court he should have been awarded a two-level reduction. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for taking the case, Mr. Stockton. The court appreciates your representation.